This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, your weekly hour of old-time radio crime brought to you every Wednesday by RelicRadio.com. This Wednesday, we'll begin with the new adventures of Nero Wolfe, their story, The Case of the Lost Heir, from April 20th, 1951. After that, it's Inspector Thorne in the Vacant Lot Murder Case, his story from July 27th, 1951.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone bell brings you mystery, adventure.
Nero Wolfe's office, Archie Goodwin speaking. Mr. Horace Crail. Does Mr. Crail know Mr. Wolfe? Oh, I see.
What is it, Archie?
A guy named Horace Crail. His secretary says he wants to talk to you.
What about?
I don't know.
Horace?
Mr. Wolfe's rather busy right now, but I'll give him a message if you wish. Yes. Yeah. Wait a second, Mr. Wolfe.
What?
Black on red and red on black.
Archie, this is solitaire.
So?
Solitaire is a game that is played by one single person alone. If I wish to put a red card on a red card or a black card on a black card...
You're cheating.
Of course I am cheating. What is the message Mr. Horace Crail, secretary, asks you to convey?
Just that he wants to see you.
In a rather tragic sense, I suppose he does.
Why tragic?
In that he wants to see me. He is blind. Tell him to come here at his own convenience.
Okay. What does Mr. Crail want to see Mr. Wolfe about? A murder? A murder that may still be prevented.
Archie.
Just a second. What?
I have run the cards out perfectly. Is it his own murder Mr. Crail wants us to prevent?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's that renowned genius who is the bulkiest, bulkiest, most ponderous, and most brilliant detective in the world. Yes, none other than that chair-borne mass of unpredictable intellect, Nero Wolfe, created by Rex Stout and brought to you in a new series of adventures over this NBC network in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet.
Once in a long while, Mr. Wolfe and I talk about this affair. When we do, we call it The Case of the Lost Heir. But I don't think the title's quite adequate. For me, it ought to be called The Case of the Gone Goose. And I was the goose.
Well, Archie, do you see any red on red or black on black?
Nope.
So?
So what?
You irritate me, Archie.
Okay, you won your little game of solitaire perfectly, as you say. Now, who is Horace Crail?
A prominent industrialist. If you read the papers, you would know.
Horace Crail. Oh, yeah, the Crail Company.
Exactly.
How did you know he was blind, if he is?
The papers have carried the story. The headlines read, Blind Father Welcomes Lost Daughter.
Oh, yeah, I remember. A few days ago, there was a picture, too.
I thought you'd remember the girl, at least.
Well, if it's the one I remember, I remember.
Archie.
Oh, well, it probably isn't true. By the way, let me tell you what I found out about the facts of life.
The door, Archie.
Mr. Crail is here to see Mr. Wolfe.
Oh, yes, come in.
This is Mr. Crail. I'm his secretary, Hugh Gaines. There's a step here, Mr. Crail.
Of course. Who is this man?
I'm Archie Goodwin, Mr. Wolfe's assistant. Mr. Wolfe's waiting for you.
Where is Mr. Wolfe, Mr. Goodwin?
I led the way. The blind man and his secretary followed. Mr. Horace Crail was tall, thin, white-haired. His face was heavily lined, but the lines were not those of care or worry. He wore very dark glasses through which he might not have been able to see even if he had had his sight. Hugh Gaines, the secretary, was in his late 20s, surprisingly young and surprisingly handsome for the kind of a job he had. I led them into Mr. Wolfe's office, made the introductions, and sat them down.
Well, Mr. Crail, what can I do for you?
As you see, Mr. Wolfe, I'm blind.
Need I say you have my deepest sympathy?
I don't give a hoot for your sympathy, Mr. Wolfe. Though, thank you, of course. I mention my condition merely because it affects the position in which I find myself.
Go on.
You.
Yes, Mr. Crail?
Tell Mr. Wolfe about my daughter. Oh, incidentally, Mr. Wolfe, I asked my secretary to do this because in this way you will get a first-hand account.
Now, let's see. A few days ago, Tuesday to be exact, at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, a young woman walked into the house and said she wanted to see her father. I spoke to her myself. She said her name was Magda Crail. I asked her certain questions.
Why, Mr. Gaines?
He asked her questions because he thought, and I thought, that my daughter died 13 years ago. Oh, either the girl who came back to me is my daughter, or she is an imposter, and she belongs in jail.
Is there any doubt in your mind about it?
Of course. That's why I'm here.
On the telephone, you said something about preventing murder.
Well, I have a stepson named Anthony George to whom I intended to leave my money. Not because I liked him. Simply because I had nobody else to leave it to.
Except your daughter.
Except my daughter. If she is my daughter.
We were talking about murder.
I was talking about my daughter and my stepson.
Same thing, I think.
Maybe, possibly. I don't know.
Mr. Crail.
Yes?
I am not a wealthy man, but I am certainly able to make ends meet.
Yeah? What do you mean?
Explain, Archie.
I think Mr. Wolf means that if you don't want to be frank with him, he'd rather not waste his time.
Mr. Wolf, I apologize if I've seemed to spar with you.
Phooey.
You see, a blind man can only judge by what he hears and smells and feels.
So?
Well, I must be a little more cautious than I would have to be otherwise.
I'm sorry, Mr. Crail. Patience is not one of my virtues. Now, about your daughter or your non-daughter. What's her name?
Magda. She calls herself Magda Crail, which, of course, was my daughter's name.
What makes you think she isn't your daughter?
Well, $10 million, partly.
Once again, Mr. Crail?
My estate may be worth more than that, but surely not less. You?
Surely not less, Mr. Crail. Rather more, I should say.
Yes, $10 million might have some appeal to an ambitious girl, eh, Archie?
Sure, but I'm not a girl, and I'm not ambitious.
Nobody could accuse you of either fault. Mr. Crail, we are getting nowhere. Either you tell your story from the beginning or take it somewhere else. Archie, I'd like some beer.
When I went out for the beer, the kitchen was a mess, and incidentally, I saw what was being prepared for lunch. When I got back to the office, Mr. Crail and his boy were gone. One beer for Mr. Wolf. What happened?
What took you so long, Archie?
I had a sandwich.
And spoiled your lunch.
You know what you're having for lunch?
Of course, I planned it. Baby octopus. Delicious.
I'll take your word for it. What happened to the blind tycoon?
Get your book, will you, Archie? I want to give you a few notes.
Oh, just a second. Okay.
Item?
Item.
You needn't repeat everything after me.
Yes, Master.
Item, Horace Crail was born blind. Item, his wife and their 6-year-old daughter, Magda, disappeared in their private plane 13 years ago. Magda returned last Tuesday. Item, no matter what he says to the contrary, Horace Crail is afraid he's going to be killed. I think Mr. Crail is right.
Memo. From Archie Goodwin to Nero Wolf. Time, 4:32 p.m. The notes you dictated on the Crail case are on your blotter. 3 pages of them. You are with your orchids. I am on my way to the Crail domicile to meet the other characters in this turgid drama. As per instructions, I will bring them here if possible. Love, Archie.
Yes, sir?
My name is Goodwin, Archie Goodwin. I believe I'm expected.
This way, please, sir. Yes, sir?
Thanks.
Hello.
Don't tell me you're Nero Wolf.
Not by a couple of 100 pounds. I'm Archie Goodwin, his assistant.
Well, I'm Magda Crail. Nobody's assistant. That awful Hugh Gaines creature said Nero Wolf wants to talk to me.
He does.
Well, where is he?
Waiting for you. No hurry, though. No hurry at all. Just play and don't worry about a thing. Black hair, green eyes, skin like a magnolia petal. Beautiful, beautiful. While she finished what she was playing, I watched her. Beautiful.
Well?
Beautiful.
Mr. Goodwin.
Archie.
Oh, we could get along together, Archie, if that's the way you are.
It's the way I am. I can't seem to do anything about it.
Where's Anthony?
Anthony George.
But I thought both my repulsive half-brother and I were supposed to meet Nero Wolfe.
I'm here in case anybody wants to know.
Over there in the shadows, listening with all his ears. That's Anthony George. Shall we go and talk to Nero Wolfe, Anthony?
Goodwin, you look like a normal sort of person.
Well, that's open to question, but go on.
If you had to choose between $10 million and killing a woman by due process of law, which would you choose?
I'll think about it between now and July 1994. Now, shall we go talk to Nero Wolfe?
Miss Crail.
Yes, Mr. Wolfe.
Why did you wait until now, until last Tuesday, to let your father know that you were living?
Does it make any difference?
I think so.
13 years ago, I was six.
What she means is that she was six when she died.
But I didn't die, Anthony Sweet.
Obviously. But Magda Crail did. With my mother.
His mother. Anthony says he doesn't remember me as a child. But I remember him, the brat.
What about me?
When I was about four or five, you were eight or nine, I suppose. Do you remember dressing up in one of Daddy's tailcoats, a sword, and Mother's hat with a plume?
Suppose I did. You're still not my sister.
Don't worry, Anthony. When poor father dies, I'll support you.
Archie.
Sir?
I made a mistake.
A mistake? You?
I thought I wanted to talk to these young people. I don't. Take them away. Take the young lady to a nightclub.
On my salary?
As part of our investigation, it will be charged to Mr. Horace Crail.
It was no hardship at all. In fact, it was a pleasure. We dropped Anthony George off at the Crail place, and Magda and I went on. And on.
You're a wonderful dancer, Archie.
You can't make enemies that way, honey.
Archie, why did Mr. Wolfe want you to take me out?
To find out whether you really are Crail's daughter.
How did he expect you to find out?
I don't know.
Do you think he knew?
He probably had some idea, but I don't know what it could have been.
Honestly?
Honestly.
Archie, do you think I'm telling the truth?
No. But wait a minute, baby. I don't think you're lying either. I just don't think.
Give me my handbag, Archie. Thanks. I've got something here that might interest both you and Mr. Wolfe. Here. Those are snapshots that were taken of me before I was six.
Yeah, cute.
Now look at me.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Well, can't you see those pictures are of me?
Kids that young all look the same to me, but, suppose they are pictures of you. What of it?
Well, just this. I found them in one of Mr. Crail's old photograph albums. My father, I mean.
Well, here's something.
The one lying on my tummy on the white bearskin rug. All babies get their pictures taken that way. Here, give it to me.
Wait a second. What's this mark under your shoulder blade?
It's a little birthmark, like a strawberry.
Yeah, it's clear. Look, honey.
Why are you so interested in babies, Archie?
Because I always thought I should have been a mother. Now, look, have you still got that mark on your back?
Of course. At least, I suppose so. They don't go away, do they? Where are you going?
I'll be right back.
Nero Wolfe speaking.
Archie Goodwin. I'm with Magda Crail.
No doubt.
What?
No doubt, I said. But never mind. What do you want?
I want to ask a question.
Go on.
You don't think Magda's Horace Crail's daughter, do you?
I don't think anything.
You're stealing your lines from me.
Never. All right, then, no. I don't think the girl is Crail's daughter.
That's just what I hoped you'd say.
Why, Archie?
Because for once you're wrong.
She's pretty, isn't she?
Yes, she is. Also, she's got a birthmark.
You have seen it?
No, but nobody's going to be fool enough to claim a birthmark. It isn't there. It's too easy to prove.
Good night, Archie.
You deserted me, Archie. Well, you know Hugh Gaines, don't you?
Hello, Gaines.
Hello, Goodwin. Making hay while the moon shines?
You know, if you work that into a routine, it could be pretty dull.
You don't like me, do you?
Do I have to?
No, not in the least.
Well, that's good. Mr. Wolfe and I feel it's wrong to like any of our clients, especially in nightclubs.
Really? Why?
Because they might sit down at your table while you're making a telephone call.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Never mind. Finish your drink.
Once again, I'm sorry.
Forget it. Mr. Crail seems to think that Magna's trying to rook him.
Apparently.
What do you think?
Boys, I'm here too, you know.
Quiet. What do you think, Mr. Gaines?
Well, to me, it's a matter of no importance one way or the other. As for Mr. Crail, what he wants is absolute proof. And, of course, there's no such thing as proof that is absolute. Do you want me to add it up for you?
Yeah, that's exactly what I want you to do for me. Add it up.
13 years ago, Mrs. Crail and her small daughter, Magda, boarded a chartered plane in St. Louis to fly across the Ozarks to Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
They took off, and that's the last that ever was heard of them, or the pilot, or the plane.
Okay, add some more.
Mr. Crail had the whole area searched for months. The search itself cost almost $50,000.
And the plane was not found.
They finally decided that it must have fallen into the Mississippi, where it would sink to the bottom and stay forever.
Now, wait a minute. Magda.
Yes, Archie?
Don't you remember anything about this trip?
Nothing. Not a single thing. The last I remember is Mother putting me to bed in a strange city, in a hotel. And that's all.
Okay, what's the next thing you remember?
Archie, dear.
Yeah?
Didn't my father go over this whole business with Mr. Wolf?
I suppose he did.
Then do we have to do it again?
There must be some reason why he wanted me to take you to a nightclub.
Because I might say something I haven't already said 100 times.
Maybe. What's the next thing you remember after your mother put you to bed in a strange city?
Archie, I have a confession to make.
This I believe. Go ahead.
$10 million is a lot of money.
So I've been told.
I don't really remember a single solitary thing before I was 6 years old and going to school in Rogers, Arkansas.
Not Anthony George wearing tails and a sword?
It was one of the pictures in the album.
Not your mother putting you to bed in a hotel in St. Louis?
$10 million, Archie.
So you're not Magda Crail?
Well, of course I'm Magda Crail. Oh, I may have tried to make the story sound a little more convincing than I should have. But I'm Magda Crail just the same. How could I be anybody else?
So far, I can't see why you shouldn't be anybody else.
Miss Crail will now bring up the matter of the diary, won't you, Miss Crail?
The diary?
Oh, you don't know. Then Mr. Wolf has told you nothing at all about this case, has he?
He probably told me all I needed to know. What about a diary?
Well, you see, Mr. Goodwin, Miss Crail's memory begins at about the happy age of 7. A black-haired, green-eyed, pigtail brat named Maggie Lomax. Only child of Walt and Mabel Lomax of Rogers, Arkansas. Am I correct, Miss Lomax? Miss Crail, I mean.
He's a sarcastic character, isn't he, Archie?
That he is, that he is. What about this diary?
To cut a long sob story short, Walt and Mabel Lomax died in an automobile accident a few weeks ago, leaving only Maggie. Take it from there, Maggie.
Well, there was no money. I looked through the house to find anything I could sell, and I came across a hidden box. The diary was in the box, along with some clothes that might fit a 6-year-old girl.
The clothes look like what the girl was last seen wearing.
How do you know?
Well, there's a photograph in one of Mr. Crail's albums taken in St. Louis the day before the flight. But for $10 million, those clothes could be reproduced, stitch for stitch.
Archie, dear.
Take him out in the alley, it would be a pleasure.
Oh, now, wait a second, Archie. With one arm tied behind you, I think you could probably beat me into a pulp. Is it all right if we don't prove it?
We were talking about the diary, Archie.
Okay, what about it?
Archie, I don't even claim the handwriting is mine. What's handwriting when you're 6 years old? Still, the first page is one of those things that has name, name of parents, home address, and like that. Color of hair, eyes, you know.
Sure, I had one myself.
Certainly. Every child had one. One or a dozen. Maybe they still do. You fill in the first page and then you never write another word.
Honey.
They were cheap. I doubt if they cost a quarter, and there was a place that said, my first date, favorite pastime.
Look, baby.
Oh, he calls me baby, Mr. Gaines.
Yes, I noticed that. I think he'd believe your story no matter what you told him.
Get lost, will you, Mr. Gaines?
What's that?
Get lost. Drop dead. Turn blue.
Well, I can take a hint. Good night, Archie and Miss Lomax.
Prissy, isn't he?
Prissy is the word.
He doesn't seem to believe your story.
He believes what he's told to believe. It's his job.
Sure.
You believe me, don't you, Archie?
Honey, you're beautiful, just the way you are. Now, let's talk about the diary.
I hate you.
I hate you, too.
Shall we dance?
The diary.
Oh, dear.
Where is it?
Do you call this romance?
No, I call it working overtime. Where is it?
Here, in my handbag. Here. Push over. We look at it together. I'm not crowding you, am I?
What's a little crowding?
Cozy, isn't it? Now, look at the cover first. My diary, 1934. I suppose somebody gave it to me for my 6th birthday.
Let's just not suppose anything, shall we?
All right, Archie. Page 1. Name, Magda Crail. Date of birth, October 11th, 1928. But you read it. Or can you read?
Anything you can write, honey. Date of birth and so on. Father, Horace Crail. Mother, Mabel Crail. Hair black, eyes green. My favorite pastime, playing with dolls. Playing has a Y in it.
You know what I think, Archie? You wouldn't call that writing, would you? Not real writing.
It's more like printing.
I think my mother guided my hand when I wrote that.
Yeah, that's the way it looks, all right. Well...
Dance now?
Dance now. While we danced, while I held that disturbing girl in my arms, I tried to believe the case was just as simple as it seemed. Somehow, she'd survived a plane crash, a head injury, and then a normal life with a couple who naturally wouldn't tell her that she wasn't really theirs. I tried to believe it. I was trying hard when...
Archie, don't look. But there's Anthony George.
Oh, yeah, alone in the corner.
You've had a lot of experience, Archie. Do you think he's a killer?
A what?
Do you think he'd commit murder?
I don't think anything about him, but why should he?
For $10 million?
I see what you mean. Are you worried?
Not with you around, Archie. Not with you around.
It was like that, maybe even more like that, until the waiter told me I was wanted on the telephone. I asked her to keep the table warm, that I'd be right back.
Hello? 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 This is Archie Goodwin.
Archie?
Oh, hello, Mr. Wolf.
I've been talking to Mr. Crail.
Wonderful.
A little less humor, perhaps?
Okay, what about Mr. Crail?
He showed me some pictures of his daughter.
Baby pictures?
Unfortunately. Some of the pictures were missing from the album.
Those are the ones I've been looking at.
Archie, I'm interested in that birthmark.
So am I.
Do you think you could persuade the young lady to have a picture taken of her back undraped?
Wait a minute. Just one moment, please.
Well?
You mean that?
Clear picture in a bright light.
How would you like her posed, Mr. Wolf?
I am not amused, Archie.
Okay, I'm sorry.
All I want is a clear, sharp, focused picture of that birthmark. And I expect you to get it for me. Good night, Archie.
Hello again.
Dance?
No, talk.
More talk?
Lots more.
What now?
That birthmark.
So I've got a birthmark. What about it?
I wish I had one that was worth $10 million.
So do I. But this one is worth nothing to me. Since my father doesn't believe I'm his daughter, and he's blind, that kind of identification doesn't mean anything to him.
You're forgetting the people he trusts. Hugh Gaines, for instance. If the birthmark is there, couldn't he look at it, compare it with those awful baby pictures, and say, yes, here is your daughter?
I've got news for you, Archie. He has looked at it. He says it looks the same as the one in the baby pictures.
Has he told your father that?
Yes. But he also told him he thought I was a fake. That somehow I found out that the 6-year-old daughter of a millionaire had died in a plane crash 13 years ago. And I found out she had a strawberry birthmark on her back. And I had one, too. So I decided to say that I was Magda Crail.
That's absurd.
Well, of course it is. You can see how it's going to work out, can't you, Archie?
Frankly, no. How?
My father went to Mr. Wolf simply to have him prove that I am his daughter, whatever Hugh Gaines says. The only thing I'm afraid of, though...
What are you afraid of, baby?
I'm afraid my darling half-brother might kill him before he has a chance to change his will.
Isn't that a somewhat mercenary view to take of the matter?
Maybe it is, Archie. And maybe I'd feel differently about it if my father had found me instead of waiting for me to find him.
He tried, didn't he?
I wonder.
Let's get back to that birthmark. Are you allergic to floodlights? I know a photographer who has a studio.
Confound it, Archie.
How did you know it was going to be me?
Because nobody else would dare to call me this late. What do you want?
I got the pictures. They're drying now.
If you come home, bring them with you. They may be important tomorrow. Have you heard that Horace Crail was murdered?
No. How? Who? Where?
Tomorrow we'll talk about it, Archie. Good night.
At 4 p.m. the next day, there was quite a lot of confusion in Nero Wolfe's office. At his direction, I'd set up a picture screen at one end of the room, and on his desk at the other end, a rather strangely constructed projector. At 4:30, the guests arrived. Magda, Anthony, George, Hugh Gaines, and of course Inspector Kramer, ready to make an arrest if he could figure out whom to arrest. Hello, Inspector.
Hi, Goodwin.
Magda, Anthony,
hello,
George, you.
Yeah, what's this all about? What's going on, Archie?
You got me, Inspector. I think Mr. Wolf wants to show slides of his trip to Yellowstone Park. But here he is. Ask him.
Oh, say, Wolf, you want to know what I think?
Not in the least, Inspector. Sit down somewhere, won't you?
Mm.
Archie, will you turn out the lights? Thank you. Now, this is a picture of Magda Crail lying on her stomach at the age of 6 months. I changed the focus so, and we have a close-up of a birthmark. A smooth discoloration that looks as if it might have been painted on.
Now, look, Wolf, you said if I came here, you'd give me the guy who killed Horace Crail, and you show me a picture of a baby's back.
Inspector, if you open your mouth again, I may not keep my promise.
Go ahead.
While we look at this enlargement of a birthmark on baby's back, let us remember that the late Mr. Horace Crail was blind and never saw it.
So what? What's he getting at, Goodwin?
Inspector, if I knew, I'd tell you. Listen.
Mr. Crail had a trusted secretary, Hugh Gaines.
I'm here.
Of course, Mr. Gaines had a brilliant idea. He knew the tragedy of Mrs. Crail and her daughter, and he decided to bring Crail's daughter back to life.
What makes you think so, Mr. Wolf?
You had access to the photograph album, and only you. Oddly enough, Mr. Crail didn't even know his daughter had a birthmark until you told him.
That may be true, but what of it?
It's unimportant. Now I want to show you another picture. Archie, explain this picture, will you?
Reading from left to right, this is a picture of Miss Crail's back. Very pretty, too.
As you can see, there is what appears to be a small birthmark, somewhat under the left shoulder blade. I changed focus. And as it becomes larger...
That's not a birthmark. That's tattooing. You can see it.
Tattooing, of course. And Mr. Gaines had a brilliant idea. How to make use of a tattooed birthmark and Miss Magna to help him out. Blind as he was, Horace Crail saw through it. That's why Hugh Gaines had to kill him.
No, you don't, Gaines.
Mr. Wolf... Mr. Wolfe, all right?
Of course I'm all right. Well, Inspector Kramer, Mr. Gaines is your man. Another bottle of beer, please, Archie.
It's right there in front of you. You know, I was thinking, a girl can get herself tattooed, can't she? Is that a crime? What does it prove?
Archie, Archie. Have I ever told you I love you?
I'm going to bed.
Good night, Archie.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolf, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story by Mindred Lord was based on the characters created by Rex Stout. This is an Edwin Fadiman production, produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. In the cast were Harry Bartell as Archie Goodwin, and Martha Shaw, Vic Rodman, Peter Leeds, Gray Stafford, and Bill Johnstone. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you the case in Room 304. Don Stanley speaking. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. This Sunday, the glamorous and unpredictable Tallulah brings you another hour-and-a-half broadcast of The Big Show, starring Fred Allen, Judy Holliday, Joan Davis, Fran Warren, and many more. And this Sunday's Theater Guild on the Air production is the Broadway comedy The First Year. Starring in this Theater Guild presentation are Richard Widmark and Catherine Grayson. Remember, Tallulah Bankhead stars in her wonderful Big Show Sunday on NBC.
And now, the National Broadcasting Company presents Inspector Thorne in The Vacant Lot Murder Case. Tonight, the National Broadcasting Company presents the exploits of the spectacular young Inspector Thorne of the Homicide Bureau, whose investigations rank with many of the most celebrated ones in the annals of crime fiction. An investigator smart enough to claim he is dumb and modest enough to believe it. Tonight, Inspector Thorne turns to the Vacant Lot Murder Case. As tonight's Inspector Thorne murder case opens, picture, if you can, a vacant lot late on a summer evening. A street lamp casting a feeble light on a large for sale sign near the pavement. A man stops in a puzzled way and says to himself,
"This is a funny thing. He said to come to number 1220. Must have made a mistake. This is a vacant lot."
"You looking for somebody, sir?"
"Yes, for number 1220. But I don't see any."
"Well, there's no 1220 on this block, mister. I live just across the street. I know there ain't. I guess you got the wrong address."
"Yes, it looks that way, son. Thank you anyway."
"That's okay. Good night."
"I wonder if this is a trap. Just what I thought. You lured me here to murder me. Help! Police!"
"You killed me. What a fool I was. Come here."
And 5 minutes later, the police are on the scene in the person of the spectacular Inspector Thorne with his right-hand man, Sergeant Muggin. And as he bends over the murdered man, we hear him say,
"Sergeant Muggin, keep that crowd back.
Come on, move on, you hear me? Get going, all of you.
Find anything on the body, Chief?"
"Nothing but a bunch of keys and some money in his pockets, Muggin."
"His face rings a bell with me, but I go blank when I think of names."
"Wait a second, Muggin. Here's a tailor's label in his coat pocket with his name and address."
"Huh?"
"It says Arthur Hayward, 470 Maple Street."
"Rings no bells here, Inspector Thorne."
"Look, Muggin, there's a girl making for the alley across that vacant lot. Stop her, quick."
"Hey, you, stop where you are or I'll shoot."
"We're the police. Come back here. We don't want to shoot a woman."
"I'm coming. I don't know anything about this. What do you want?"
"I'm Inspector Thorne. This is Sergeant Muggin. What's your name? What's your hurry getting off a murder scene?"
"My name's Della Laverne, and I don't know anything about a murder."
"Listen, Della, lying to Inspector Thorne won't get you anywhere."
"I'm not lying."
"Why were you running across this vacant lot?"
"It's a shortcut home."
"Where do you live?"
"West 23rd Street."
"That's 40 blocks from here, so the shortcut story don't go. Come over here. Look at this murdered man. You recognize him?"
"He's a complete stranger to me, Inspector Thorne."
"How is it you're not carrying a handbag, Della?"
"Handbag?"
"Sergeant Muggin, look behind that big for sale sign in the vacant lot. I've got a hunch that's where she was hiding. Maybe she dropped her handbag with the murder gun in it there."
"Okay, Chief."
"Inspector Thorne, I'll tell you the truth. I do know the murdered man. His name is Arthur Hayward."
"Arthur Hayward? Why didn't you admit you knew him in the first place?"
"Because I didn't want to get him into trouble with his wife. That's why, Inspector Thorne."
"Dead men can't get into trouble with their wives."
"Well, I didn't think of that."
"I'm a little dumb myself, but I did."
"Your hunch was 100% right, Chief. Here's the dame's handbag. Found it behind a for sale sign. No gun in it, though."
"Murder was committed 5 minutes before we got here, Muggin. That gave her time to get rid of it."
"I'll have the boys give this vacant lot the fine tooth comb treatment, Chief."
"Right, Sergeant Muggin. Well, Della, just to save time, suppose you tell us why you murdered this man."
"You won't find any gun of mine here, Inspector Thorne. I didn't kill Mr. Hayward."
"No?"
"I was here because Mr. Hayward telephoned and asked me to meet him here tonight in front of this vacant lot."
"Phoned you?"
"Yes, because I didn't want to be seen on account of his wife. I waited behind that for sale sign."
"A dark night, a vacant lot, a lady hidden behind a real estate sign. Fine setting for a murder."
"But while I was still behind the sign, I saw Mr. Hayward coming. I heard him muttering to himself."
"I'll finish that line for you, Della. You saw somebody come along and shoot him. Is that it?"
"Believe it or not, that's exactly what happened, Inspector Thorne."
"I've heard that kind of story before. It's got whiskers, Della. By way of advice from a dumb cop to a smart girl, try another."
"Hey, are you gents the cops?"
"Come on, move along, kid. Chase yourself."
"I got something to tell you."
"What's on your mind, son? I'm Inspector Thorne."
"Inspector Thorne? The big shot from Homicide?"
"That's who he is, bud."
"Who's that little brat? Get him out of here, Inspector."
"That's all from you, Della. All right, son. Go ahead. What's your name?
My name is Jimmy Kildare, and I live in that house across the street.
Did you see this man shot down, Jimmy?
No, sir. But I talked to the gentleman before he was killed.
Talked to him?
The gentleman was all mixed up. Said he was looking for number 1220 on this block.
1220?
I told him there wasn't no 1220. That'd be this vacant lot. So I told him he must have the wrong address.
What then, Jimmy?
That was all, Inspector Thorne. I kept moving on. Mom had sent me to the delicatessen for some things, and when I got back, she told me about the gent being murdered.
Did you see this girl hiding behind the for sale sign there?
No, sir. I didn't look that way. Say, did she kill him?
I didn't kill anybody.
That's all, Jimmy. And thank you. I may see you again.
If you want me, I live in number 1223 across the street. Bye, sir.
Inspector Thorne.
Yes, Della?
I forgot to tell you about Mr. Hayward talking to that boy. Why do you think Mr. Hayward asked him where to find number 1220? He knew this was a vacant lot. I don't get it.
You should. If...
If what?
If you told the murdered man to meet you at a phony address and waited there to murder him.
What?
Sergeant Muggin.
With you, Chief.
I think that's the ambulance coming now to pick up the body.
Yeah. What about this dame?
Tell the boys to take her down to my office and hold her. And keep a sharp eye on her, Muggin.
You're telling me, Chief.
After she's safely tucked away, meet me at the murdered man's house. I'm on my way there to break the news to his wife. Here's the address. Mrs. Arthur Hayward is the poor woman's name.
Be seeing you there, Chief.
Yes?
Is Mrs. Hayward at home?
I'm Mrs. Hayward. I suppose you want to see my husband?
My name is Thorne, Inspector Thorne of the police.
The police? Oh, come in.
I'm afraid you must brace yourself for very bad news, Mrs. Hayward.
Bad news, Inspector Thorne? What?
That's your living room, isn't it?
Oh, yes, but why?
I suggest we go in there.
Oh, surely.
Sit down in this chair. What I have to tell you is quite terrible.
Terrible? Tell me what you mean, please.
It's about your husband, Mrs. Hayward.
My husband?
Your husband was murdered about a half hour ago. The killer stepped out from a vacant lot in the dark and shot him.
My husband murdered.
Easy. You're becoming hysterical.
No, I'm not hysterical.
Easy now.
My husband wasn't murdered, Inspector Thorne. He and I were just having a snack in the pantry.
What?
Yes, I'll call him. Arthur, dear.
Coming, Ethel.
Arthur, this is Inspector Thorne from the police.
From the police.
He came to report that you had been murdered.
Is that correct, Inspector Thorne?
There must be some mistake, Mr. Hayward.
For a murdered man, I'm very much alive.
Oh, if you hadn't been here at home, Arthur, I'd have fainted when Inspector Thorne told me.
A woman we caught running away from the murder scene positively identified the body as yours, Mr. Hayward.
This is utterly fantastic.
I've never heard anything like it.
To top the thing off, we found this tailor's label in the murdered man's coat.
It's my tailor, all right. And my name and address. This is the darndest thing I ever saw.
Did you miss any of your clothes recently or give them away, Mr. Hayward?
Now, let me think.
Arthur, remember? You gave that blue serge suit you didn't like to your brother, John.
That's right, I did. Last weekend at our little place in the country. Inspector Thorne, do you think it was my brother who was murdered?
There's a certain resemblance, Mr. Hayward. It may be.
Oh, this is dreadful.
Now, don't jump at conclusions until you see the body. It may not be your brother at all.
But it must be. This label comes from the suit I gave him.
Perhaps he didn't like the suit any better than you did, Arthur, and gave it away to somebody.
Oh, I imagine that's Sergeant Muggin who works with me. I'll let him in. I thought it was you, Muggin. Come in here. I want you to meet somebody.
Huh?
Sergeant Muggin, meet Mr. Arthur Hayward.
Listen, Chief, I'm in no frame of mind to stand any kidding right now.
Inspector Thorne isn't kidding you, Sergeant Muggin. I am Arthur Hayward, and this is my wife.
Inspector Thorne thinks some mistake has been made, Sergeant.
If it has, it's not the first one that was made tonight, ma'am. I might as well spill it now as later, Chief.
What's that, Muggin?
I let that dame we nabbed at the murder scene get away from me.
You mean you let Della Laverne give you the slip?
Call me all the names you want, Chief. The dame gave me a smooth story about seeing a guy doing the killing.
I see.
Said she saw Wade toss the murdered gun away, started leading me to the spot, and made a clean break. I sent out a general alarm for her. I'm betting we'll never see her again.
Well, don't let her get you down, Muggin. It's a bad break, but those things happen.
I should have caught on a dame with a name like Della Laverne was a smoothie. And that's a real name, all right. I got this calling card of hers out of her handbag.
Inspector Thorne, if the woman who identified the murdered man as my husband, Arthur,
was really Della Laverne, she must have been insane.
You know this woman then, Mrs. Hayward?
I know who she is, and so does my husband.
Ethel, please don't bring this out.
This is a murder investigation, Mr. Hayward.
Arthur, let's forget family skeletons and such things. Tell Inspector Thorne who Della Laverne is, and her shameful connection with your brother John. You must tell him, dear.
I hope we'd never hear of it again, Ethel. But you're right. We must tell. Here's the whole dirty story, Inspector Thorne.
Yes?
Well, my brother John had a bad criminal record.
Criminal record?
Out on the West Coast where we used to live. John was cashier at a big bank out there and made off with nearly $500,000 in bearer bonds.
Was he caught?
Yes, he got 10 years for it and served nearly the full term.
Where does Della Laverne come into the picture?
I'll answer that, Inspector Thorne. Della Laverne, the woman Sergeant Muggins says escaped from the murder scene, went to prison for the same crime.
You mean she was an accomplice of your husband's brother, Mrs. Hayward?
Yes. And she was sentenced for 5 years. And when she was released, she swore she'd kill John the day he was set free. She thought he had informed the police of her part in the crime.
If she went up for 5 years and your husband's brother for 10, she had nearly 5 years to plan his murder.
Yes.
But we're not certain yet that the man murdered tonight is your husband's brother. Mr. Hayward, you say you gave him a blue serge suit last weekend in the country.
I was surprised to see him there, Inspector Thorne. I hadn't seen him since he went to prison.
A bad penny always turns up.
When he showed up at our little place in the country, he said he was in a bad way, so I gave him that suit and some money. Even though he was my brother, I wanted to be rid of him so he wouldn't disgrace my wife Ethel and me any further.
I understand. I do the same thing myself in similar circumstances.
He said he was flat broke and destitute. I was so upset seeing him. It never occurred to me to ask what he did with $500,000 he stole.
That's just what I was thinking, Inspector Thorne. Maybe that woman, Della Laverne, has the money.
How could she have it, Ethel? Have you forgotten what happened when she got out of prison 5 years ago?
I remember she came here and tried to blackmail you for a lot of money.
What's that?
She tried to get $10,000 from Arthur, under threat of making it public that the notorious criminal John Hayward was Arthur's brother.
What did you say to that, Mr. Hayward?
I recalled the old saying, never to give a blackmailer the first dollar, and threatened to have her arrested. Well, in any event, it proves that she didn't get away with $500,000 she and John stole.
Without talking out of turn, Chief.
Yes, Sergeant Muggins.
I'm getting the idea Mr. Hayward's brother was bumped by the dame for that wad of loot.
We're not sure the murdered man is Mr. Hayward's brother.
Well, would it help if my wife and I went with you to identify the body, Inspector Thorne?
The body is at the morgue, still in the medical examiner's hands now, but, say, in half an hour, I could send a car for you.
We'll be ready, Inspector Thorne.
But, Arthur, to that horrible place, the morgue.
It's the only way to find out, dear.
Oh, I suppose so.
Sergeant Muggins and I will meet you there. Goodbye till then.
Somebody should bat me one for letting that Laverne dame slip out of my hands.
Forget it, Muggins. When we get to the car, radio the Department of Criminal Records.
What about, Chief?
Tell them to get the full file and photographs of Della Laverne and John Hayward up to my office, quick.
Gotcha, Inspector Thorne.
And a few moments later, as Inspector Thorne is scanning the criminal records of John Hayward and Della Laverne in his office at the Homicide Bureau, we see Della herself excitedly knocking on the door in a notorious criminal hangout in New York's Lower East Side.
Glass! Glass, Macy! Open the door. It's me, Della. Hurry.
Have you got the brains of an idiot coming here?
I got brains enough to trick Inspector Thorne and the stupid cop with him, Sergeant Muggins.
Get out of here, you fool. We'll both be pinched. Get out.
I am not getting out, Flash. Don't think I'll take the rap for the murder of Hayward alone. I'll throw you to the police.
Now, how could I put the rap for Hayward's murder on you? I didn't even know the man you call Hayward was murdered.
You lie through your teeth. Inspector Thorne nabbed me on the scene and you tipped them off. But I made idiots of them. I made a getaway.
You make idiots of Thorne and Muggins? You're the idiot. I told you that phone call to meet Hayward at that vacant lot was phony, but no, you turned a deaf ear to me.
You had that call put through to me yourself, Slash Macy. You planted me there so you could kill him and frame me.
Listen, Della, don't try any tricks on me. It's unhealthy.
You asked for it, Slash, and now you'll get it.
Give me that gun and do it gentle and careful.
Oh.
I got you covered. Give it to me before I blow a couple of slugs in you.
Oh, no, 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 I'll give you the gun. Here, I'll drop it on the floor.
Now let's talk sense. You think I believe you made a getaway from Inspector Thorne?
It was Muggins that I tricked.
You're tricking yourself, Della.
I got away from them both.
Listen, Della. Did he get your name?
Yeah, I had a card in my bag. Besides, my name slipped out in the excitement. They had me cuffed.
Okay.
You got one chance left, Della. One last chance.
How? What last chance?
Run back to Thorne at the Homicide Bureau.
Turn myself in.
I've got you off hot spots before.
Well, what if you have?
I'm telling you for the last time, Della. Rush as fast as your legs will carry to Inspector Thorne. Put on the act. Tell him you were scared and made the terrible mistake of running away.
Oh, it sounds crazy.
It's your only chance, Della. Your only chance.
Oh, all right. I'll go. But if you're tricking me,
Every second counts. Go.
Inspector Thorne in The Vacant Lot Murder Case will return in just a moment. But first, it's the Silver Jubilee on NBC. We'd like to take a minute to give you some program notes concerning the shows we've prepared for your radio entertainment. First of all, a new comedy team has joined NBC. They're Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding, and they bring you light satire and nonsense sketches designed to display their many voiced talents. Bob and Ray come to you Monday through Friday afternoon, and for one fun-filled hour on Saturday evening. Then on Sunday, hear the further adventures of The Saint as played by Tom Conway, and hard-hitting action with screen actor Lloyd Nolan as Martin Kane, Private Eye. Sunday, too, actor Carlton Young brings you the double role of Philip Galt and the Whisperer. And later Sunday evening, Mr. Moto, Mr. I.A. Moto, ace Japanese-American security agent, bids you join him as he puts on the black cloak of mystery and enters the realm of international intrigue. Be sure to hear Dimension X on NBC every Thursday evening. Stories dealing in time and space, and brought to you in future tense. Yes, morning, noon, and night for the very best in radio entertainment. Keep your dial set at this, your NBC station. Now, back to Inspector Thorne and the Vacant Lot Murder Case. And now, a few minutes after the scene we just heard between Della Laverne and Slash Macy, evidently her accomplice, we see Inspector Thorne at the morgue beside the murdered man's body, and we hear him say to Arthur Hayward,
"So you positively identify this body, Mr. Hayward?"
"Yes, Inspector Thorne. It is my brother John. What a fearful end he came to."
"Perhaps he's just as well off, Arthur. A life of crime, years in prison, a marked man always."
"Maybe so, Ethel. But to me, the brother I was brought up with..."
"Try not to think about it, Mr. Hayward. The identification of your brother's body is a great help to me. It's easy to see your brother's pronounced family resemblance."
"Yes. People used to say that if my hair weren't so black and poor John was so blonde, well... But anyway..."
"What do you know, Inspector Thorne?"
"Know what, Sergeant Muggan?"
"With 1,000 cops looking for that dame, Della Laverne, and get nowhere. What does she do but walk in here and ask for you?"
"Della Laverne here?"
"That's it, Chief. I got her waiting outside."
"I wonder what her game is. Mr. Hayward, would it inconvenience you and your wife to stay in the reception room until I've talked to Della Laverne?"
"We'll be glad to stay, won't we, Ethel?"
"If only to satisfy my woman's curiosity. Yes, Inspector Thorne."
"I'll tell you what she says, Mrs. Hayward. I'll not keep you waiting too long." "Well, Della, I wish I was smart enough to know what your game is coming here."
"You're a very clever man, Inspector Thorne. A very smart man."
"Thanks for the compliment, Della. But believe me, far from being smart, I'm blind on all fronts, except on catching murderers. What's your game coming here?"
"Please, Inspector Thorne, there's no game, no trick. I suddenly realized how silly I was to make a getaway from your Sergeant Muggan. It was only because I was so frightened. You must admit you practically accused me of murder on that vacant lot."
"I have the murdered man's criminal record on this desk. And I have yours. Why did you meet him at that vacant lot? If you didn't murder him, who did? Why did you lie and say his name was Arthur Hayward when you knew very well it was his brother, John Hayward?"
"I'm not hiding that I was a crook or that I was in prison. But I went to meet Arthur Hayward on a phony telephone call."
"Phony telephone call? Who made the phony call? Answer me and don't lie. You're as near the chair as you can get without being in it."
"That phone call was phony. I fell for it because I thought I could get some money out of Arthur Haywood for not singing his brother John was a crook. And I'm telling you again, the man I said was Arthur Haywood was Arthur Haywood.
You've certainly got a yen to fry, Della. Lies on top of lies.
I was sent to that murder scene on a frame. And I'll tell you who framed
me. All right, tell me.
I'm working with a guy named Slash Macy. He put me on the hot spot to save his own hide. He's your killer, not me, Inspector Thorne.
Okay. I'll list you as innocent.
Thanks. Thanks for believing me.
Innocent until proved guilty. Sergeant Muggan.
Here I am, Chief.
Let this girl out, but put two men to trail her and check every move she makes.
You dirty cop. What else could I expect?
Show her out, Sergeant Muggan. And, watch your step this time.
You're telling me, Chief? Come along, Della.
Take her out through the reception room. I want Arthur Haywood and his wife to get a good look at her.
Okay, Chief.
Well, Mr. and Mrs. Haywood, was that woman Sergeant Muggan led through here the one you know as Della Laverne?
It's the woman who tried to blackmail my husband. No question.
She's the one, Inspector Thorne.
Hmm. Now, tell me something about that little place of yours in the country, Mr. Haywood. Do you own it or rent it?
I own it now, but my brother John owned it originally.
What did you do, buy it from him?
Yes. John told me he wanted the money to pay lawyer's fees before he went on trial for the $500,000 robbery he was accused of. He said he was not guilty of any wrongdoing. He was my brother. I believed him.
The records here show he was guilty. I asked about the cottage because of the $500,000 he stole. It was never found.
What? Never recovered?
No. I've got an idea. His coming to the cottage and asking you for a suit and some money was a ruse. Chances are his real object was to find the place empty and get the loot he may have hidden there.
I don't see where he could have hidden it. But it might be a good thing for you to make a thorough search of the cottage and grounds, Inspector Thorne.
I'll send a searching squad there at once, Mr. Haywood.
Oh, here's a road map to help them find it. The place is off the beaten track.
Fine, thanks a lot. Well, I'll not need you any longer, Mr. and Mrs. Haywood. Good night. The same car that brought you is outside, ready to take you back.
That's very thoughtful of you, Inspector Thorne. Well, let's get started, Ethel.
Yes, I'm ready for bed. Good night, Inspector Thorne.
I saw Mr. and Mrs. Haywood leaving, Chief. What do we do now?
Go out to the Haywood weekend place in the country.
The search for the 500 grand the mighty man might have stashed there?
I don't think we'll find that there, Muggan.
No?
No, but I do think we'll find something highly interesting to Della Laverne, the woman we nabbed on the murder scene.
Della Laverne?
And also to her present accomplice in crime, Slash Macy.
Slash Macy? Is he in on it too, Chief?
We'll see. Anyway, Muggan, I'm about to close this case.
But is Inspector Thorne about to close the case as he said? For it is now the following morning, and we see him and Sergeant Muggan back in Inspector Thorne's office in the Homicide Bureau, and we hear Sergeant Muggan say,
"Well, Chief, it looks like we wasted a night searching the Haywoods' weekend cottage. What did we find? Nothing."
"I found this bottle, Muggan. It's the clue that will break this case."
"Huh? Hello, Sergeant Muggan talking. What? Okay, I'll tell the chief. Chief, grab your hat. The boys have trailed Della Laverne out to Mr. and Mrs. Haywood."
"That's what I was looking for, Muggan. Quick, we've got to get there, fast."
And now, at the Haywood's house, we hear this.
"Della Laverne, what are you doing here? Who's this man with you?"
"You know what we're after, Haywood."
$500,000, Haywood. Don't stall if you don't want to be plugged."
"Arthur, he'll kill you."
"You got the idea, lady. $500,000 or he meets the angels."
"I haven't got it. You're mad. I don't know what you're talking about."
"I'm giving you 10 seconds, Haywood. 1, 2, 3, 4.
"Stop. I haven't got it."
5, 6, 7, 8. 9.
"Oh. One move, Slash, and I shoot to kill.
But
Muggan, get that gun away from him. Don't move, Slash."
"Thanks, Slash. Not so tough as you act, huh?"
"Handcuff him and Della Laverne together, Muggan."
"You don't understand, Inspector Thorne. Slash and I were just making a social call on Mr. and Mrs. Haywood."
"With a gun in your hand and murder in your heart."
"You're dumb, Thorne."
"Hurry, Muggan, with the cuffs."
"Right. All set, Chief. Got him."
"I didn't murder Haywood's brother, Inspector. Slash put him on the spot.
Shut your trap, or
I'm doing the talking, Slash.
This guy Hayward's got 500 grand that belongs to Della and me.
Inspector Thorne, these people came to murder me for something I haven't got. How could I have the money my brother John stole and went to prison for?
I know how. It's because you, Arthur Hayward, are not Arthur Hayward. You're actually the ex-convict John Hayward. You murdered your brother, Arthur.
Ethel, give me that Tommy gun.
Kill them all, John. Mow them down.
They asked for it, Ethel.
It's Thorne or...
Muggin, drop to the floor. Point that Tommy gun to the ceiling, John Hayward. I've got you covered.
He's got us, Ethel. He's got us.
Drop that gun, John Hayward, or you're dead. Pick up the gun, Muggin. Get it out of the way.
Right, Chief.
Now, John Hayward.
I'm not John Hayward. I'm Arthur Hayward. You got John's body in the morgue.
Is that why you tried to kill me?
I went off my
Listen
head.
Listen carefully. Here's the evidence that nails you as the murderer.
Evidence?
One, the road map you gave me shows your fingerprints as those of the ex-convict, John Hayward. They match the prison fingerprints of John Hayward.
Me and me.
Right. Now, here are 20 bank books in this woman's name who calls herself Ethel Hayward, your wife. They total $500,000.
So what?
Ethel here was actually the murdered man's wife. I think...
I confess. I was his wife, Arthur's wife.
Shut up, Ethel. You're sending us both to the chair.
A confession may make the court lenient, John.
Don't call me John, you fool.
I'm confessing, John.
Keep on, Ethel.
When John went to prison, Inspector Thorne, he left the money with me, and I promised to wait for him.
Yes?
But I got tired waiting for him, so I got a divorce and married Arthur.
And when John got out of prison, you and John murdered your husband, Arthur.
That's the story, Inspector Thorne. John came to our weekend cottage, demanded the $500,000, and he and I murdered Arthur. What else could we do?
I don't know, Ethel. But dumb as I am, that's the way I figured it. The only clue I had was this bottle of hair dye that John, the ex-convict here, used to dye his hair black to make him look like his brother Arthur.
Oh, I see. That accursed bottle of hair dye caught John and me.
That's all, I guess. I arrest you and John Hayward for first-degree murder.
I'm ready to go. You're not so dumb as you made out.
I am dumb, but I made out. Take him in, Muggin. Next stop, the chair.
And so ends the Vacant Lot murder case. The part of Inspector Thorne is played by Carl Weber. Direction by Kenneth McGregor. The script was written by Edward Francis from the original story by Frank Hummert. And now this is Fred Collins inviting you to tune in again next Friday at this same time when the National Broadcasting Company will present Inspector Thorne in the Golden Girl murder case. It's the Silver Jubilee on NBC.
That's Case Closed for this week. If you want to find more from Nero Wolfe, Inspector Thorne, past episodes of this podcast, and all the others, just visit RelicRadio.com. You'll find it all listed on the front page. There's also a link to our Shoutcast stream there and our donate button. If you enjoy this and all the shows, please consider a donation. Your support makes all of this possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.